Hey, it's Friday. And of course, we're getting close to the holidays. What's a great gift for people who, the people in your life? Maybe even like, this is actually a great gift for everybody. I think you could give this to your parents, to your friends, to your mail person, maybe your milk delivery. People don't really do that anymore. I'm talking about sunsetlakesabade.com. I'm talking fudge with sabade in it. I'm talking coffee with infused with sabade. I'm talking about an ability to sleep.
Oof.
The tincture with melatonin.
It is good stuff.
Or the ability to deal with your children at certain times. Maybe you'll take a little squeeze of the tincture. And there it is. You're a little bit calmer. You're a little bit slower to react. Or the smokables, which is nice after a big meal. You don't want to get too you don't want to get too caught up in your head, go down a rabbit hole, but you want that that body relaxation.
You go into mental spirals after a big meal?
No, no, I was talking about smoking other stuff.
Oh.
I mean, I go into mental spirals just about after everything I do. It doesn't matter.
I've just never heard that called a big meal. Keep going.
Yeah, or a small meal. SunsetLakeSabade.com. They're a great company. They have, we just finished a, don't have the numbers on that yet, but we just finished a big program with them to donate money to give directly. But they've also donated to strike funds and to food pantries. They practice regenerative farming. They use only organic fertilizer. They don't have integrated pest management, so they don't use any pesticides. And they have great business practices, mostly employee-owned, $15 minimum wage, just an all-around great company, great sponsor, and a great product. So check it out, sunsetlakesabade.com. Use the coupon code BESTISLEFT.
Wait.
Jeez. Left is best.
Sabade?
Yeah, no kidding. Left is best. Left is best will get you 20% off. Check it out, sunsetlakesabade.com. Go there now. And speaking of now, here's the show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, December 3rd, 2021. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Natalie Schur, columnist at the New Republic, will be joining us. Also on the program today, it's Casual Friday. I'll mention like a documentary that I saw that I'm looking forward to watching another one too. But before we get there, Senate passes a continuing resolution. They punt the budget until mid-February. Meanwhile, Mitch McConnell announces that the Republicans, surprise, surprise, will have no legislative agenda running up into 2022 because we're just going to vote on critical race studies anyways. U.S. and Mexico find a deal to allow court-ordered Trump policy remain in Mexico to be reinstated. The economy adds 210,000 jobs, but the jobs report is actually better than that. More Omicron found in the U.S. Meanwhile, Delta ravages the unvaccinated. New documents show the DOJ also is investigating disgraced former brother of somewhat disgraced on leave CNN host Cuomo's. Federal Trade Commission file suit to block what would be the biggest semiconductor deal in history. And of course, concentrate more power in the hands of just a few companies. New York Times FOIA could lead to the release of a more comprehensive Mueller report. Missouri Republican governor suppresses the state's own study, which showed that masks are indeed effective. Intel agencies find no evidence of a so-called Havana syndrome. Lastly, prosecutor files involuntary manslaughter charges against the parents of that Michigan kid who killed three people, shot up at school. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is a casual Friday. I'm having some type of like a allergy reaction to something. I'm not exactly sure what it is.
Sorry.
But I'm sure it is not Emma Vigeland who is here today.
How can you be so sure?
I'm not totally sure. I just figured that was a good segue.
Well, it's nice of you to not say you're allergic to my presence, but we can't be certain.
We cannot be certain.
No.
But nevertheless, Emma Vigeland here, of course, as she is every day.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to hear any more about the Real Housewives event that I attended last night?
I know, but okay. There may be others who want to hear about
no,
it.
No, I got it all out with Bradley.
Okay.
Yeah.
Emma went to a big cabaret last night. Yep.
Just with my friends. It's a thing. You know, maybe I shouldn't reveal it. It actually really does not make me look good.
It is...
I would have gone.
Yeah, Bradley's into it.
Yeah, it doesn't say a lot for what's going on in this office. I will say that. It is Friday. Thanks for joining us. Just a reminder, folks, if you go to the website Majority Live, you will find that the same thing is there as you will find at the website Majority Report Live. Of course, it's .com.
Mm-hmm.
When you go there, what you will find is the opportunity to buy tickets to the January 16th Big Live Show. The Big Live.
It's catching on.
Yep, there it is.
Please don't book a hotel for January 6th before you notice what the actual day of the show
right,
is.
It's the 16th. It is Sunday the 16th. It is the day before MLK Day in this country, so many people will have a three-day weekend, which would have been a great thing to know before we booked it, because that would have helped people be able to travel more, but I didn't. It was just a coincidence.
Ah. Oh, do we have a show the next day?
No, we don't. We have we do our you know, our famous compilation show. But we have people traveling in from all around the country. You can be one of those people, or you can just come in from, you know, I don't know, Boston area, central Massachusetts area, southern New Hampshire area, northern Rhode Island area. I mean, anywhere in New England you could come. So check it out. Tickets are going fast. Right now, we have, we'll talk more about it later. But what else? That's about it, I guess. I would just go right into it. I don't know why I even brought that up. I mean, I guess I know why I brought it up, but let's get to the news.
The news.
We will talk more about other things later. Just one word on the, this is an interesting note that I picked up from Dean Baker about the jobs report today. 210,000 number for job growth. A good number in normal times. During a recovery, that's a little bit low. You want something more than that. But a couple of things to note. We've had upward revisions on jobs consistently throughout the past 6-7 months. But the other thing that Dean Baker points out, the index of aggregate hours in the private sector increased by 0.5% in November. If you were to add up those hours, it would be the equivalent of more than 630,000 new jobs. So that is that's good news. It means that there's more economic activity. More people are getting more hours as they want them. And part of that is employers are increasing hours since they're unable to hire new workers. Low-wage sectors are having trouble attracting workers because they're low-wage. So this is good. We want this inflation of wages. At one point, to the extent that we have inflation, we do have inflation in some products out there. That will ease over time as the as our logistics get sorted out. And this is something that's going around the world. The wage increases will not recede, and that's good. Employment is now down to 423,700 jobs, 12.5% from pre-recession level, accounting for most of the drop in healthcare employment. Childcare lost 2,100 in November, while home healthcare lost 0.3,000 jobs. The news, according to at least someone like Dean Baker, is a little bit better than what you would get if you were to read, I don't know, the headlines from the New York Times. Just wanted to say that. The other thing, of course, is what's happening with the Build Back Better bill.
The endless negotiations.
Let's check in with CNN. Lauren Fox interviewing Kristen Sinema, one of two major reasons why we're going to get a much, much less in that Build Back Better bill if we ever get anything from it.
Say you're standing in the way of what we've been campaigning on for years, whether that's repealing the 2017 tax cuts, whether that is changing voting rights laws. What do you say to progressives back home who are disappointed in the job that you're doing here?
Well, I'm serving in the exact way that I've campaigned on over the last near decade that I've served in Washington, D.C. And when I ran for the United States Senate in 2018, I told the folks of Arizona what I would do. That I would come to the Senate, try to find bipartisan solutions, be an independent voice for Arizona, and always put everyday people in Arizona first. I would say that's exactly what I'm doing.
Mm. One of the ways that you negotiate in talking with your colleagues is that you're pretty forthcoming about where you stand on something. We talked about the corporate tax rate. Why do you think it is that your leadership sometimes overpromises? Do you think that that's a problem for voters and for the Democratic Party?
I can only speak for myself, but what I can say is this.
Pause it for one second. I'm so nauseated by this. I don't even know why we're playing it. First off, there's nothing worse than people who interview somebody and don't listen to the answer and just go on to the next question that they've written a week ago or their producers wrote or whatever it is.
Yeah, they could have brought up the fact that, for example, Kyrsten Sinema ran on prescription drug reform when she was running for Senate,
yes.
Which was one of the things that she actively stripped out of the bill. Just like something for that CNN reporter.
Or minimum wage stuff.
Yeah, minimum wage. I mean, just quickly, like, this is the first time Sinema has been speaking publicly about this. She basically said, I don't negotiate in the public. But at the same time, she says later in the interview, the Arizonans know exactly where I stand. So this reporter had a real opportunity to actually hammer her points home with her and actually get a sense of what she even believes. So that's what makes this, like, I don't know, terrible job that she did here.
Well,
so
I love
egregious.
The question of, like, do you think that they're overpromising?
Yeah.
What?
That's the layup of layups.
I guess continue on with this, and then we'll go to the next one.
Why do you think it is that your leadership sometimes overpromises? Do you think that that's a problem for voters and for the Democratic Party?
I can only speak for myself, but what I can say is this. I would never promise something to the American people that I can't deliver. And I think it's not responsible for elected leaders to do that. The concern I have is that, first, it's not very honest. So you should just be honest. That's something my parents taught me when I was very young, and it stuck.
Some of your colleagues, some of them progressives, think that you're kind of an enigma, that they're not sure where you stand on any one issue.
Oh, you're kind of an enigma. This is a great. Oh, this is what we want to know. Is she an enigma? Is she an enigma? What a great question to ask someone in Enigma.
She's like, it's perfect for my brand. Thank you for that question.
Let's listen to that. At what room are you sitting there going like, I'm? You know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to ask her if she thinks she's an enigma.
What's the best way that answer can go?
Like even like those old Barbara Walters interviews where, you know, she would try and get like this actor or somebody to cry or something like that. Like, yeah, do you realize like you're what, like, is this like an audition for like an E! Show or something? Do you think you're an enigma? Let's go to the next one. Oh, God.
Prepared to vote yes when that comes to the floor?
Well, I don't set the schedule for the Senate floor, and I'm always prepared to vote and to vote for what's right for the interests of Arizona. I personally believe that the best way to create legislation is to be thoughtful and careful so that we're crafting legislation that truly represents the interests that we want to achieve and that creates a benefit and helps people all across Arizona and the country. So that's what I'm working on right now.
So it doesn't sound like you're quite a yes yet on the version that just passed the House of Representatives. What changes do you want to make?
Well, folks know I don't negotiate in the press, so I'm not going to do that with you.
I know one of the things that you made clear very early in the negotiation with the president and your majority leader was that you were not going to support raising the corporate tax rate up a single point. Did you feel like at any point they weren't taking your comments seriously, given the fact that they were promising for a long time?
Like, okay, I mean, this has like the tenor of if you're at a doctor's office, them asking you a bunch of questions before they give you your medical exam. Like, there's no follow up or no anything. I mean, what was that question right there, Bradley? You can go back, or you can go back. I don't even know why. I just had to digest it. You can keep going. Yeah.
Party leader was that you were not going to support raising the corporate tax rate up a single point. Did you feel like at any point they weren't taking your comments seriously, given the fact that they were promising for a long time that this was going to be part of the bill?
Here's an alternative question.
Yes.
Don't keep her up there. Keep her up there. Here's the alternative question. Why? Why are you so convinced that the corporate tax rate has to be this low?
That's
why?
What I wanted to say. I don't care about
Do you think
feelings.
People are taking you seriously?
Yes, right.
Do you
exactly.
feel like people are taking you seriously about the corporate tax rate? Because it's the corporate tax rate.
Right.
Do you feel like you're not able to express your desire to have lower corporate tax rates? Do you feel like people are denying your feelings about that? Continue.
You know, I don't really spend much time thinking about what other people are saying publicly. What I really want to focus on is how to get to a solution and solve a problem that matters to everyday folks in Arizona. And people back home in Arizona know that I am committed to ensuring that any legislation we pass retains America's competitiveness. So I won't support any legislation that increases burdens on Arizona or American businesses and reduces our ability to compete either domestically or globally. And so I want to make sure that if we are crafting legislation, we're doing it in a lean and efficient way that's fiscally responsible and doesn't impact things like inflation or make our businesses less competitive.
So
pause it, incidentally, I should tell you right now that if you're worried about inflation, cutting taxes, worst thing you could do. Not the worst thing, but a bad thing. You're giving these corporations more money. More money, if that's what you're into, is inflationary in that respect. But there's no way that what's-her-face, Lauren Fox, that deviates from, I want to get inside. I want to get inside.
Yes, she seems more interested in, like, the psychology of cinema as opposed to locking down her policy positions.
She's not going to negotiate in public. What I'm also not going to do is even tell you even remotely what I want out of this bill.
And don't worry, I don't know yet. The reporter isn't going to ask. So
is there anything left of this? Or
I'm kind of curious about what her follow up though was to that. Like, I don't know if it's how it's cut, but she's literally not responding to anything that Sinema is saying. I don't even know if she's listening, and perhaps that's why. And not to make this a media critique, but perhaps that's why Sinema went and spoke with her.
Yeah,
and that
sure was the first. Negotiated this,
I
yes,
mean, the
yes.
first time that the first time that she actually
is there
spoke
an intern I could get interviewed by?
Right.
Go ahead.
Fiscally responsible and doesn't impact things like inflation or make our businesses less competitive.
So you've been criticized from progressives who say you're standing in the way of what we've been campaigning on for years.
I just wanted to make sure she was, six for six on the follow-up question, not having anything to do with the answer given by Sinema.
Only progressives have a problem with what you're doing, as opposed to the president of the United States, who is not a progressive, whose bill was twice the size than it is even right now that you're haggling over.
I mean, I do want to make the media critique. Like, this person graduated from undergrad the same period I did. I think I'm fairly up on this stuff. Like, I don't know that I would be the one to interrogate a senator over this stuff, but news organizations, they like the, I don't know, this is for views and for, like,
well, it's also like, how do we get you in here?
Yeah,
senator, what do we need to do to get you in that seat? Oh, okay. Well, we'll just get that person over there who usually does the profiles and style the style pieces. Jeez. Folks, wine is like fine art. Did you know that?
I did not.
It can be good. It can be bad. Every once in a while, it can be truly transcendent. Introducing the Prisoner Wine Company. 20 years ago, the Prisoner Wine Company combined some of California's best and most unusual grape varieties to make a bold and complex blend, the Prisoner Red Blend. From the shape and the weight of the bottle to the label featuring Francisco Goya's artwork, every detail is striking and memorable. And now the Prisoner Wine Company will ship all of their rule-bending blends, like the Prisoner Red Blend, the Prisoner Chardonnay, and the Thorn Merlot, direct to your door. Now, I have not had the... I'm not a Chardonnay drinker. I am a Merlot drinker occasionally. I have not had the Thorn Merlot. But the Prisoner Red Blend... is great. Mm. It is. It's like, I think it's got like some Syrah in it, and I don't know. I'm not that terribly sophisticated about the wine, but before we okayed this, I had my sister try it out because she is. I'm not going to say annoyingly, but she is very, very particular about her wine. She used to work in the wine business.
I understand.
She signed off on the Prisoner Wine. I really liked it, but you know, my palate is not necessarily that sophisticated. But she said this was good, and we've been having the Prisoner Wine. I'm not going to get into it too much, but she comes over, she makes pasta, you know, whatever. Prisoner Wine is the flagship wine of the Prisoner Wine Company, and it's delicious. Great holiday gift. And it's a great wine to drink when it's not the holidays.
Right.
Go to theprisonerwine.com/MAJREP, MAJREP, for 20% off plus shipping, including on your first purchase. You get it in time for the holidays. This is the best deal they have available. Get 20% off plus shipping included at theprisonerwine.com/MAJREP, MAJREP. That's theprisonerwine.com/MAJREP. Offer valid on first-time online orders only for U.S. residents of legal drinking age through the end of the year, December 31st, 2021. Other exclusions may apply. Please, of course, enjoy wines responsibly. Check it out. Also, I found a new use for my ExpressVPN. As you know, internet service providers operate like monopolies. Worst of all, many ISPs log your internet activity and sell that data to big tech companies or advertisers. To protect all of your devices, you need ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is a simple app for your computer or smartphone that encrypts all of your network data. It tunnels it through a secure VPN server so that your ISP cannot see any of your activity. Look, a lot of your life is on the internet. That's the reason why I recommend ExpressVPN as the best way to hide your online activity from your ISP. This sounds a lot more complicated with all the different letters and this and that. It's an app that you have either on your phone or your computer, on your TV unit thing, your Apple TV or your
Roku.
And all you do, basically, you tap one button, you're protected. everything that goes through there. ExpressVPN does all this without slowing down your connection. For me, you know, it's I operate it, gives you security in the background, this and that. But for me, like the fun stuff, how am I going to watch the Patriots on, let's say, this is hypothetical.
Right.
How am I going to watch the Patriots on YouTube TV? Oh, I'm in New York. Oh, hit my ExpressVPN? No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I'm in Boston, dude. Just watching the local game. No more Jets and Giants for me in New York.
Well,
ExpressVPN. So look, in addition to that, obviously it gives you a lot of privacy as you surf the web. So stop handing over your personal data to ISPs and other tech giants who mine your activity, sell off your information. Protect yourself with the VPN that I trust to keep me private online. ExpressVPN.com/majority. That's ExpressVPN.com/majority to get 3 extra months free. Go to ExpressVPN.com/majority right now to learn more. And lastly, you want a special gift?
Yes.
You do? Hello, Tushy. Hello, Tushy Bidet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is the gift that literally keeps on giving all year. 365. I mean, assuming
all day, if you're really into that.
I mean, if you're healthy and you're regulated, 365. The Hello Tushy Bidet checks all the boxes. Useful, but definitely unique. High tech, but affordable for you, the gift giver. Plus, eco-friendly. And I would put another couple boxes. It's one of those things that people are like, I don't know. It feels like a big, it's like you're crossing the Rubicon. And so that's what makes it such a great gift. Hello Tushy Bidet cleans your butt way better than wiping. It cuts toilet paper use by about 80%. Washes your bum with a fresh stream of water for a better clean. You just spray and pat dry. There's no plumber needed. There's no electricity needed. Hello Tushy conveniently attaches to your toilet in under 8 minutes. The complete Tushy system turns your restroom into your best room with the Tushy Bidet attachment, ottoman, they have a toilet brush, they have the Tushy stand and tissues. You can join the millions of happy butts falling in love with Hello Tushy. Look, folks, if you've ever been bidet curious, or you have anybody in your family who's bidet curious, or maybe they don't even realize they're bidet curious, this is one of those, like, this is truly, you know, the tech people always say this, but this is truly like one of those solutions that people did not realize. Because we live in a country where we just have a very narrow sense of imagination when it comes to like how you're supposed to do this.
Well, also because the Hello Tushy saves you money in the United States. We want to keep you buying that toilet paper, draining your bank account. It's all the big conspiracy against bidets.
It never really occurred to me, but that could actually
be
true.
It's kind of part of it, yeah.
Folks, honestly, if you've never tried a bidet, you will not go back. Give the gift of a clean bum to yourself or your loved ones this holiday season. Get 10% off plus free shipping right now at hellotushy.com/majority. That's hellotushy.com/majority for 10% off and free shipping. Don't forget to tag at HelloTushy on social to celebrate your clean bum. All right, folks, all of those links will be in the podcast and YouTube descriptions. Want to welcome to the program, columnist at the New Republic, Natalie Sharp. Hello, Natalie.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
Here with Emma. Thanks
hey,
for
Natalie.
Joining us.
Hello.
All right. So let's, you write quite a bit about health policy, as you may be aware. let's just start with what we heard from the Supreme Court this week. I mean, I think there was a certain inevitability that, that people had that this was coming, but I think there was also some measure of surprise with the conservative justices as just a sort of like from what we heard in this oral arguments. What was your take this week?
Well, yeah, I think we can't be too surprised. This is obviously a very central part of the right's political project, has been for a very long time. And we know that entities like the Federalist Society see abortion as one of their litmus tests. for, you know, who they will support and put through this pipeline that eventually has gotten from, you know, circuit courts to the Supreme Court. I think it's nonetheless extremely jarring. I think that, you know, women in this country, particularly poor women, have had to rely on some semblance of, you know, settled constitutional law to access abortion in the way that they can. Obviously, there's not very wide access for many people. But the idea that that could go away and that we're entering into a completely uncharted territory moving forward, I think really is shocking and upsetting for a lot of people. And I hope it's politically galvanizing as well.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, do you think it's going to be? I mean, it's sort of on some level, it's sort of shocking to me that it hasn't been galvanizing in that way.
Well, it hasn't been taken seriously. I mean, I think like the way, for the same reason that it was jarring to hear John Roberts basically say, why not 15 weeks? Like, what's wrong with 15 weeks in the oral arguments 2 days ago? Like, okay, that makes it a lot more clear and present danger, you know, not to use a legal term, but whatever. Yikes.
That's a movie term, I think. Oh. You know, clear and present danger. But I mean, what is
I was at a cabaret last night, so.
Well, Natalie, well, I mean, honestly, like, we have multiple states in the country right now where abortion is not necessarily illegal, but effectively out of the reach of many women. And it feels like it has not galvanized people in the way that one would have hoped.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a big part of the reason for that is that a wealthy woman can still get an abortion and will always be able to get an abortion. You know, even before there was widely available legal abortion in the United States, you know, early in the 20th century and before, wealthy women would go off to Sweden for a few months. You know, this is something that's always been true. And I think that people don't understand abortion as a class issue as much as they have to. And I think that so far, you know, a lot of what we've seen Republicans be willing to do is, you know, chop along the margins and make it harder and harder for poor women to get abortions. But so far, you know, access has remained for wealthier and middle class women all along. I think that, you know, moving forward, it does look like they are poised to finally slap down Roe in a more substantive, significant way, and probably, you know, kick it to the states. There will probably be a renewed fight at the national level electorally after this happens. And, you know, at that point, we'll see. I mean, there have been all sorts of anti-democratic levers pulled by the right, and I think by Democrats to some extent, too. And so we'll have to see if the fact that abortion is very popular and widely supported will translate into keeping it around in a meaningful way for a meaningful number of people.
I think, you know, Emma pointed out sort of maybe inadvertently on some level what the surprise was. Like John Roberts came out and said the 15 weeks thing. And then that's sort of like, and I don't know what we can really glean ultimately from oral arguments, but if I, you know, when I was predicting last week, I thought they would just drop it down to 15, and which would effectively overturn Roe v. Wade, because Roe v. Wade was specifically about viability. But then if they start to blur the lines of what constitutes viability and et cetera, 15 weeks. And then, you know, 2 months later, I don't know, Louisiana says 5 weeks and that's the way that it goes. But it does feel like from the questioning that Roberts, you know, maybe Roberts can go back and try and fashion some type of like compromise. But it does feel like the other other five conservative justices are like, we're done, but, you know, nibbling at the edges. Let's just do this, which, and maybe part of it is so that they can pretend like they're not political. This is the weird dynamic that's going on here, right? Is that five of them, or at least some of them, feel like they have to convince the world that they're not political. So in some way, by not going full on and reversing Roe v. Wade, they would look more political in the lead up to a midterm election than they would if they actually got rid of Roe v. Wade. I mean, I'm convinced. Does that make sense?
I don't know. I mean,
if you get rid of Roe v. Wade right before an election, that's bound to be more galvanizing than doing some type of half measure. They want to prove they're not political. And so they just are going to go with where they're ultimately going to go, I think, on some level. And that's sort of what it's starting to feel like, that in June of next year, 4 months before, 6 months before the election, they're going to overturn Roe v. Wade, and 20 states are going to more or less become anti-abortion states. I mean, make it illegal. And then, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think the way that I see the Supreme Court, I think that they're very, very political. They're not necessarily electoral. Like, they don't have to worry about campaigning, about getting votes. And I think that that's a big difference, or reason that you see the difference between, you know, what they are willing to do on vaccines versus what elected Republicans are willing to, you know, that the Supreme Court has been a lot more accepting of vaccine mandates than have elected Republicans. And it's because elected Republicans have found it useful to do all of this, you know, anti-COVID chest thumping to rack up votes, whereas, you know, the Supreme Court justices don't. I do think that you are right, that that's, you know, very interesting timing in terms of, you know, I think they're perfectly willing to shoot down Roe versus Wade, and that they don't have to worry about, you know, when people will be elected. But, you know, certainly that's something within their eyeshot.
I will also say, and just as a reminder to people, which is not to obviously, I mean, the, you know, to underplay the importance of Roe v. Wade, but the other big case is going to be in this one with Becerra as the I can't remember what it is now, but where the Chevron doctrine and the ability of federal agencies to actually regulate just our entire sort of regulatory regime in this country is under grave threat as well. There's another case. I can't remember exactly what it is. It's Becerra is the defendant in this case. And we may see Roe v. Wade may be one of a couple of massive changes with our relationship with our government in this country over the next really 12 months or so. But let's talk about the Build Back Better, because you wrote a piece in the New Republic recently about the insulin thing. And on some level, like, we had Biden, I think it was yesterday, was it the day before? They ruled that, or I'm not exactly sure if it's going to go through, I would imagine it's Health and Human Services, that insurance companies need to cover the cost of tests and of home tests. And this is just like another one of those things, like, if you just stop right there and don't think about it, like, oh, that's good. Except for the fact that, like, I'm going to buy a test for $23 and then I'm going to go through the 4-day process of trying to get this back from the insurance company. Like, it's insane. It's insane. But let's talk about insulin, and we can talk about the test as well.
Yeah. So, you know, insulin, I have been writing and researching, reporting on insulin for a long time. And as I'm sure you know, around a dozen people over the past couple of years that we know of have died of insulin price gouging, have died because they could not afford their insulin for various reasons. And so a lot of Democrats made a lot of the fact that the version of Build Back Better that they just passed in the House caps the price of insulin, that no one will ever have to pay more than $35 for insulin from now on, which is not exactly what's in the bill. The bill doesn't cap prices of insulin. It's an insulin copay cap. So for privately and, you know, people insured through public insurers, they will only have a $35 copay. And I want to be clear that that is an improvement on what exists now and will certainly help a lot of people, and that that $35, you know, is including even if you haven't hit your deductible. So I don't want to say that it's nothing, but it doesn't impact uninsured people. We know that right off the bat, that's 10% of the people in this country. And, you know, for a disease, if you have type 1 diabetes, a lot of the people who use insulin do have type 1 diabetes. That's a disease that you have to manage very, very carefully, that only a couple hours without proper medication can land you in the hospital or worse. And so that is something that is going to be inherently very affected by gaps in the healthcare system. We know that there are so many ways to have gaps in the healthcare system. If you're typically an insured person, but have just started a new job, you might go through a couple weeks without insurance. If you are traveling, you might find yourself out of network. You realize you left your medication at home. That's the kind of thing that is going to keep affecting people who are on insulin. And actually capping the price that they pay, the list price, is the only way to make sure that there are never gaps big enough to fall.
Yeah, all right. So let's just be clear there. The capping the list price is different from capping what you have to pay out of pocket if you're insured. So what is insulin? Because I buy insulin, but for my cat, and you do not get a discount. If you follow some type of daisy chain of calling multiple places for animal coupons for, I'm not kidding about this, about insulin, you can save maybe $100 off a vial, which costs $300. of the insulin. What are people paying right now? Do we have is there a price that we can say, or is it just it depends on too many factors?
Well, it does depend on a lot of factors, because it depends on, you know, what your insurance status is. So most people are not paying the list price. If you are insured, you either already have a copay cap in place through your plan, or you might have a copay cap in place through your state. And for people who are privately insured who don't have either of those things, this law will help, that they now have a $35 copay cap as of 2023, I think, on their plans. So if someone has insurance, then their copay cap is $35. And that's per insulin. So a lot of people are on two different kinds, so it might be $70 a month. If you are uninsured, or if you are going out of network, or if you exceed the amount of insulin you are allotted per month, you know, a lot of different things. When you think about the situations that might make you have to pay full freight for a medication as opposed to a discount at the pharmacy, there are a few different ones. Those are the big ones. And so those people are paying around $300 at a typical pharmacy. There is a new program at Walmart where a vial of Novolog is about $150. Not everybody knows about that. $150 is still a lot. I'm sorry, maybe it's lower. Maybe it's only $75. I misspoke. I apologize. That's still a lot for a lot of people. They might not know about that program. They might not have a prescription at Walmart. It might be too late to call their doctor. So there are all sorts of reasons that someone might not be able to get that. But for the most part, the list price is $300 at a typical pharmacy.
So, I mean, Sam was talking about the COVID test earlier, right? And how you have to jump through a million hoops to get reimbursed. And it's there by design, right? It's convoluted by design, in my opinion, in a way that kind of creates all these barriers to entry for people to actually use programs in a way that benefits them, because at least in the way that the Democrats are currently constructed, they're not interested in making things straightforward, because that makes things a little less profitable.
Yeah. I mean, you know, whether or not it's by design, you know, someone wanting it to be complicated, it certainly is complicated by virtue of how complicated our system is. And, you know, that's inherent when you have so many different payers, so many different providers who are supposed to negotiate with the payers, but often just kind of foisted on you. That's, you know, a completely Byzantine maze, and it's going to be difficult to do things efficiently through the insurance system for that reason.
Well, let's talk about that, because also you did a piece about the COVID antiviral pills, and the FDA just approved, or I should say, an FDA panel. Closely, I think it was like 13 to 10, actually, a Merck antiviral pill. Mm-hmm. wasn't a huge, I wouldn't say like they were, they didn't seem to be like super psyched about this pill in terms of its risk and its efficacy. At least the Merck one. I think we've yet to see the Pfizer one, but they were a little bit taken aback, I think, by some of the way that the data was presented. It's hard for a layperson to really sort of assess, but 10 to 13 or 13 to 10 is not, this is not a slam dunk, but that an effective pill, or at least, I guess, treatment, would make a big difference in terms of the pandemic or the endemic. But all of this is sort of like secondary to the idea of having some type of, universal single-payer health insurance to actually deliver this stuff, right, at this point?
Yeah, so antivirals, and you are right that Merck just got one approved, and there's another in the pipeline from Pfizer, so they have applied for approval. Basically, those pills, if taken right at symptom onset within only 5 days, so you need to do it very quickly, they reduce hospitalization, so severe disease and death, by a certain amount. What was disappointing about Merck's is that initial suggestion from the company implied that it was about a 50% reduction in severe disease. That looks more like 30%. So the balance of whether the risk, and there is some concerns about risks, whether that is outweighed. Paxlovid from Pfizer looked more promising to begin with, that it had about a 70 to 90% reduction. So, people are still hanging their hopes on that one, knock on wood. But you're absolutely right that in our system, getting started on a medication within 5 days of system onset is not easy. We haven't even figured out how to get the testing straight. We
the
still have, yeah.
So nuts. Yeah. It's so nuts.
It's
so nuts to me.
So stupid.
And worse now than it was a year ago. There were more places to get tests a year ago, and the turnaround was quicker. I mean, this is like the perfect example of what happens when you have a for-profit system. They just, there wasn't enough people getting tests, so they rolled it back. And now you want to get tests, you want to go to Thanksgiving, you get to basically sequester yourself for 48 hours to get your test results back, make sure you don't get infected in the meantime.
Yeah, I mean, what we need are rapid antigen tests that you can do at home. We need people to be able to get a whole lot of them so that there's absolutely no thought process like, oh, should I waste my test on, XYZ? You want people to waste tests to some extent, right? Like not completely wantonly, but, you want people to have a very liberal standard for when they should test, and that's going to be a key moving here on out. So, yeah, I mean, if you have a little bit of a sniffle, but it's not so bad, if it is COVID, you're going to have to start antiviral treatment within 5 days. We have not built the testing infrastructure for that, let alone, the insurance and primary care infrastructure. There are a lot of people in this country, particularly unvaccinated people, who don't necessarily have a relationship with a care provider or a pharmacy that they know how to talk to, or they don't necessarily know how to look into these things. And with 5 days from symptom onset, the clock is really ticking. And we know this because monoclonal antibodies have not had the uptake that they could have had either. We already have, it's a much more arduous treatment that has to start within a few days of onset, but, not too many people have used it, partially because of these barriers.
Well, that's why the whole, line from Fox News and from Republicans for a while, this is about a personal decision between you and your doctor. And if you want to make a decision about whether to get vaccinated or not, just make an appointment with your doctor and have that conversation, as if, like, one, people are insured and able to just make willy-nilly appointments or have conversations with a primary care doctor, if they have one at all, about a very obvious decision to get vaccinated or not. I mean, like, so much of the gaps that we're seeing are based on, like, what we've been talking about for the past 20 minutes, this completely broken system, and then also just these multiple barriers to entry that, like, I don't think it's, I'm repeating myself, but conspiratorial to say it's purposeful in some ways.
Oh, I think it's got to be. I mean, I just think it's tough to get, it's almost impossible to cancel your cable.
Yeah,
and
right.
They do that on purpose. They do that on purpose.
It's the same thing with your cat's insulin situation. Like,
yes.
Well, I mean,
there's no reason why I've got to literally call five different places and they all have like an inside track on the number you call to get the coupon,
yeah.
So that they can go and say that, well, if you're buying it, it's actually cheaper than it really is. Yeah. All right. I always want to touch on one more thing too. This, the remain in Mexico thing. I know this is a little bit outside of your portfolio, but you follow the news and there's two elements about this. Immigration activists have been unhappy with the Biden administration's approach to immigration. They have not been nearly as aggressive in charting a new course, even from an administrative standpoint, from the Trump administration, whether it's Title 42 or other aspects. There is a backlog of a lot of refugees and they're dealing with that. This remain in Mexico, they wanted to reverse it. In fact, they reversed it. Then a Trump-appointed judge responding to a lawsuit, I think it was from Texas and one other state, forced them to reinstate it. They went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, we're fine with that judge saying that you've got to reinstate it. The ruling was, if you can negotiate with Mexico to reinstate it, it has to be reinstated. They have come to a deal with Mexico. The NGOs that were supportive of these people who are remaining in Mexico, it's a horrible situation for immigrants and refugees who are there, or asylum seekers. These NGOs basically said, we're not going to cooperate with this because this is a crap show. And so give me your take on our response to this. There's another case that the administration has brought. I believe it's in the Fifth Circuit. To try and reverse this again. Mayorkas has said that he doesn't want it. But what's your sense on this? Because they seem to be able to negotiate with Mexico in a way that suggests to me they're not dragging their feet in a way that I would have liked to see them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I certainly don't follow immigration politics quite as closely as I follow health policy. But my understanding has always been that, you know, the Biden administration and the broader Democratic Party basically wants to get criticized less for immigration issues than the Obama administration does. And I think does, you know, want to some degree roll back some of the Trump era policies. But I don't think that they want to make a substantive commitment to doing those things, either, you know, in terms of actually doing them or the politics of calling for them. I think that, you know, the way that ruling worked out, I think is probably just a huge gift for them. I think that that's probably what they were hoping for, that it can kind of look like, oh, we didn't do, well, shucks, gosh, what can we do? I guess next topic, let's move on. That seems to be the goal here.
I mean, let's be clear, right? You go into negotiations with Mexico, it would be very easy to say like, oh God, we forgot the paper that we left. We're going to have to.
You can't push say it if you don't have the paper.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a pattern too. One, the Biden administration falls back on procedure all the time, right? Procedure is why we can't do X, Y, and Z. And also, they blame their inaction on judges. They did this too with the drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, which is now, like, they're selling permits or opening up the bidding process for permits for drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. And they basically said, well, a judge said we can't block the Trump administration's decision to do this, to allow to open these permits to oil companies. So what can we do? I don't know. You can just kick the can down the road about opening this bidding process, which requires action on your end. They consistently try to blame judges so that they appear above the fray. But the reality is that the policies that they're upholding by pretending to be hands off about this are unconscionable. And it's like, it's a frustrating thing to watch it play out in the media, because I do think they get the benefit of the doubt because they pretend to be kind of senatorial and above it.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. I think you're right.
It's taken 8 months for them to release, and they still haven't, the report that they commissioned on the impact of student debt relief because it's caught up. It's, you know, I keep calling and I call at 4:59 p.m. and they've left the office already and that type of stuff. But they could have done the same thing, it seems to me, with these negotiations.
That report is wherever the piece of paper that they left when they went to the Stay in Mexico meeting.
Yeah.
Whatever these things are.
Dude took that report portfolio to Mexico, and now we can't get it back, and we got to wait for them to come back from Mexico.
We're not digitized. We're not digitized yet. Sorry.
Exactly. So, Natalie, you also wrote a piece, How to Rebuild the Democratic Party. It focuses on local stuff, but this is what I propose.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but we're going to Boston, Massachusetts, where you live. Well, you know, I'm not, you know,
it's not that's not narrowing it down that.
That's right. Yeah. In the Boston area. Will you join us at our show on January 16th?
We're calling it the Big Live.
Yeah, I would love to. That sounds like a blast.
Fantastic. And we will talk about that piece and more. And of course, have you ever seen Archer?
Not yet, no.
No. Have you ever seen that show, Bob's Burgers?
No. Sorry.
What about Assy McGee? You know, like you don't watch a lot of cartoons.
No, I guess I don't really. I've got one of those things where you can, you know, go on to Netflix and Amazon, but I can't just turn on the TV.
All right. Well, I mean, these cartoons are on. Jeez. Okay. Well, then.
Yeah, okay. I can do some watching before January 16th and make sure.
John Benjamin and Larry Murphy will be there. I mean, you forget it. It's not going to be. Now you're not going to care about those guys. All right, maybe we'll. What TV shows do you watch?
Benjamin's been in more
Succession.
Oh.
Well,
yeah,
no,
so that's that guy's
Succession. No one from Succession will be there.
No.
That's okay. I was hoping they wouldn't be.
Is that the only show?
Although my mom lives by Kieran Culkin, and she'll call me every time she sees him.
Ooh, okay. No. There's some hot leads.
Basically, I'll try to figure out a way to get him to January 16th, the Big Live.
That's not going to happen.
No, well, I mean, never say never. We were talking about maybe having Big Poppy there at the show, so.
Well, now you just ruined the surprise.
Ah, you're right.
Natalie, sure, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Thanks.
All right, folks. We're going to go into... fun half right now. That's the way we're going to roll it today. Yeah.
Just right now, like this?
Well, let me just say this. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. In the fun half, I'm going to talk about what documentary I saw this week.
Oh, wow.
And another one that I want to watch. Yep. Pretty exciting stuff. Folks, it's your support that makes the show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you support the free show and you get extra content every day. Just about every day. Every day. More or less. Yeah. Just coffee.coop, they're having a special. You don't even need the coupon code.
Oh.
So head over there.
Need some more coffee.
Yes.
And you know what? I am going to...
They have a special cold brew.
Yes.
You're a cold brew maker.
I know. I haven't... this is why I've been getting... I haven't set it up since my move. I'm like, there's still like 5 boxes I'm just looking at and haven't unpacked yet. But soon I will be making cold brew, and that's why I need to order from Just Coffee. And I'm going to get that grinder so I make it fresh, because you've convinced me that I'm, you know, in the Stone Ages getting pre-ground coffee.
Yeah. You can't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, but...
I know. And I like coffee, and that it makes no sense that I'm not, like, upgrading my game here.
There you go. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckian universe of media?
Left Reckoning, this Sunday we're going to release a think tank for patrons, patreon.com/leftreckoning. We had Paul Prescott on to talk about his run for state senate in Pennsylvania, and also check out the Daniel Boone episode I did on Literary Hangover. More and more people have checked that out because apparently they were missing the episodes where I wasn't just talking, reading a diary of a plantation owner in Virginia. So they like the Daniel Boone stuff, they've heard of him. We'll be doing John Milton this December.
That'll be fun.
More and more people are talking about Daniel Boone these days.
I know. Daniel Boone is interesting little snapshot into the American, what's perceived as the American dream, as a guy who had to keep going west because he was indebted to folks.
Yep, there you go.
We found out yesterday that Bender is going to be launching a new show soon.
Whoa, what is it?
We don't know the name yet. Well, he gave us a hint, but I'm excited
and
about
what is it. What is it about?
Bitcoin. He's doing the anti-Bitcoin show.
It's like such a good idea. Yeah. It's the perfect time to launch something like that.
Ooh, interesting.
We should have him on once he officially launches it. I mean, well, we have him on every Thursday, but maybe.
Well, to teach us how to short digital cryptos.
Right.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. We're going to go early into the fun half for a Friday anyways, so that we can take some phone calls. See you in the fun half. Hit the like button.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.